The following program was produced by an independent community producer. The opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of the ECAT staff or board of directors.
Giving a voice to the voiceless, pulling stories out of the shadows and putting them under the spotlight, making sure that each person is valued and cared for. This is Humanity First with Peter Evers, presented by BAMSI.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Humanity First. My name is Peter Evers, and I have the privilege of working at BAMSI, an organization that is a multi-service organization providing services for many people with disabilities. And this week, we just wanted to give a nod to the upcoming anniversary of the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, because it's very important for a lot of the work that we do. We're going to have a conversation about whether the ADA has worked. It was signed on July 26, 1990, by President Bush. It was the world's first ever piece of legislation nationally that covered the rights of people with disabilities, which is extraordinary if you think about it, because it, to me anyway, that wasn't too long ago. But I think the real question is, has it worked? And in my opinion, it's a bit of both. Yes, it's worked in a way that has improved accessibility for individuals with disabilities because of the new building codes that have been required of, well, new buildings, not old buildings, because many of them were grandfathered in. But in other ways, it just has not, because we're still seeing poverty levels, we're still seeing housing issues, we're still seeing employment issues for people with disabilities that haven't really changed that much as the ADA has settled in over the years. But we're going to have a couple of experts that are going to come and talk to us. We have Martha Clements, who is a person served, who lives at Kolarusu, which is one of our group homes. She is the chair of our Human Rights Committee. And we're also going to have Jenny Shuni come on. And Jenny is our director of program performance and also the organizer and lead for our Human Rights Committee. So we're going to get into it in terms of the broad spectrum of what the ADA has done, but also at the ground level on a day-to-day basis, on the coal face of people struggling with disabilities, how does the Human Rights Committee and people who are committed to human rights uphold those rights of those vulnerable populations? So we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jamie. I'm an essential worker here at BAMSI, and I'm a nurse. Nurses are essential here at BAMSI because as nurses, we really have the opportunity to make an impact. We have very small ratios, so we have the opportunity to really learn everything about the person served and be able to give the best care. It really serves such a great purpose for me as being a nurse and really why I came into nursing. Learn more about nursing opportunities at BAMSIjobs.org.
Giving a voice to the voiceless, pulling stories out of the shadows and putting them under the spotlight, making sure that each person is valued and cared for. This is Humanity First with Peter Evers, presented by BAMSI.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Humanity First. And as promised in the first few minutes, we have a couple of wonderful guests who are BAMSI representatives. First of all, we have Martha Clements, who... Hi, Martha. How are you?
Hi there, Peter. Very good.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. And Marty, you are a resident of one of our homes and very importantly, a member of our Human Rights Committee. And as I mentioned in the first piece, we're going to be talking about human rights in the context of the ADA, which was signed 34 years ago. So we're coming up on the 35th anniversary on that of that. So welcome, Martha. But we also have Jenny Shuni. Hi, Jenny. How are you?
Hi, Peter. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, and Jenny is our director of program performance and is our mover and shaker and a driver of our human rights group, which really, I will say, Jenny, since you've been involved in this, you have really carried this. So I thank you on behalf of our person served and all staff here at BAMSI.
So
let's get into it. It will be a momentous year next year when we look at 35 years of the ADA. We've had 34 years of it, and it's one of those moments when you want to pause and think about how far we've come and maybe how far we have to go. And I don't know many conversations about pieces of legislation that don't begin with that, right? That many of these things begin with big ideas that people have fought for years and years and years, And they fall short. And I'm not sure if we should condemn things because they fall short, but we have to see it in the context of where we have to go. But I'd like to start, Martha, if that's okay with you, to talk about your role, because there is, let's face it, there are very few things in a free society that are more important than human rights. So that's a big, broad statement, right? That's a statement about the importance of the rights of the individual. And we are a democracy and we're a society that believes very much in that. When we say that, that means all of us, right? And you are, as the chair of the Human Rights Committee, maybe we could start, Mother, by you telling us a little about that role. Well, first of all, how did you come about being involved in human rights, and how did you get to the lofty position of chair of the committee?
Well, I was in a DAHAB program, and I was doing a lot of artwork, and I decided people were talking about a lot of problems and how, you know, they didn't seem to know how to solve them. So I thought of doing something for the bigger picture. And I heard somebody, Stephen, a friend of mine, talking about this group he was on. And, you know, it you could volunteer on it. And I just decided to take the courage and go to the meeting. And when I went to the meeting, everyone was very welcoming.
Was it what you thought it was going to be like?
Well, this in the short, it was better. It was better at first. Like, people were extremely friendly, and that was very nice to be welcomed like that, and, you know, start discussing things. And they were very emotional about it, and that was a good feeling.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly where I was going to go with that question, because you're talking about some pretty heavy stuff, right? I mean, you're talking about, nobody likes to think about this, but sometimes bad things happen in places where people are not capable necessarily of fending for themselves and having a voice. I mean, literally not having a voice in some cases, right? And so how important is it that there's a group of people who are standing up, who are making a noise, who are saying we have standards and we need to adhere to those standards? And that's really a question for both of you, Jenny, because I know that you're so involved in that. I would imagine sometimes it involves speaking truth to power, right?
Definitely speaking truth to power. And that comes from inside, you know, your democratic right to express yourself, which I've always had, you know, since I was younger. And, you know, living in this country, the freedom of speech is very important, and to the right people that, you know, will respond to questions you may have or reach out for problems.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I think I'm sorry, Jenny, I might have just trodden on you there. But, you know, I was thinking about there are some things that come to mind for people around that might be quite obvious in terms of human rights abuses. But can you give us an example of something that might be a little bit more subtle than that? What is a typical complaint that you might be dealing with?
Well, in my case, there's complaints about, you know, furniture and people, you know, there's how to find the complaint book to fill out the forms, where it's placed, you know, people don't know where to ask for help.
So it's important to realize our committee, we have two committees. BAMSI is a really large organization. So we have a Brockton and a Foxborough committee serving the Southeast, Metro, and Central West regions of Massachusetts. The committee members are made up of nursing staff, lawyers, family members, persons served, and clinicians. So they all have different viewpoints. And some of the complaints that we get, is they can be as simple as the water is too cold or too warm in a program, up to someone is speaking inappropriately to me, or I feel that I have been abused, you know, physically. It can be as severe as that, or even more severe. I mean, we review all of the investigations that go through BAMSI. We review all of the restraints that go through. We review all of the complaints. We review all of the behavior plans and restrictive practices within the agency. So it's a lot of material. It can be pretty heavy. It's a lot of work. All of our members are volunteers, and they dedicate a lot of time to the committee, not only to read through everything, but also to provide their feedback based on their individual backgrounds and specialties. And that's really important because it's all about peer review. And it's not just one person's voice, but it's a group of people coming together with different viewpoints and backgrounds and reviewing everything that's happening. So we appreciate all of our committee members because they devote so much time and energy and really are in it for the right reasons. You know, they're in it for protecting the human rights of all the individuals we have here at BAMSI.
Right. And again, there's nothing more important than that. And I guess I'm going to ask the question, what does the Human Rights Committee, what kind of weight does it have? What kind of importance does it have in the agency?
Well, it's very important. We review decisions and action plans that come through. As Martha can attest, and she's already said, people can get pretty emotional about investigations. And they have so much so as talked to higher leadership, human rights regional specialists with the state, and any members that they might need to gather more information to make a decision about, was this the right thing to do? Or do we need to do more? What needs to be changed? Does the agency need more training? How is the HR system within the agency working? So they will request more information from whatever entity they need to try to come up with a solution or a reasoning of why somebody's rights might have been restricted, or if somebody's rights were inappropriately restricted. Mm-hmm. So,
and those opinions and those findings become very much a part of the process of the quality improvement process that the organization is going through, right?
Of course. We have impact on making changes, important changes within the system. And that's where we want to be. That's what we want to do. Yeah. There's no improvement without multiple voices coming together. That peer review, I really stress that. There's a human rights framework that we always have to follow. And that peer review is really important in that process.
Yeah, and I mean, it certainly makes us all feel much more comfortable that there is a place where these peer reviews are going on, where we're actually setting standards. We are realigning standards and behavior. And we can, and our funders demand that, right? I mean, we are funded by the state, and the state demands that we do that. This isn't something, and by the way, we would do it anyway, but we're also under the eye of the people that fund us. So that's a really good sort of safe mechanism for capturing that kind of incident.
That's absolutely true. And the other thing we have to think about is what might have been a standard and okay maybe 5 years ago might need more improvement and a change now. And that's what's important too. Having that opportunity, reevaluating something and realizing something needs to be changed, or there needs to be an adjustment made.
Yeah.
And, you know, needs improvement.
So. Yeah, such a good point. You referenced history. So let's talk about history a little bit. Everybody's a history buff, but as we were talking just before the show, 34 years ago, on the 26th of July, 1990, President Bush in the South Lawn at the White House signed the ADA, the Americans with Disability Act. Interesting moment in time, right? Because it was the world's first piece of legislation supporting rights of people with disabilities. You think about that. It was 1990. Now, I'm old, so it seems like 5 minutes ago to me, but it really wasn't very long ago. And, you know, when we think about the effectiveness of legislation, you know, we've come a long way. We've still got a long way to go. But I'd love to ask you, you know, as we deal with these things, you know, at the coal face, if you like, on an everyday basis, one of the questions is, how much has the ADA affected people with disabilities' lives, and how effective has it been? So let's start with what it talked about, right? It talked about making sure that in America, people with disabilities had access to services, to the environment that they live in, to buildings. But it also wanted to address the issue of disparities in health, of disparities in income, of making sure that employment was available to people. Let's start with that, Jenny and Martha. Are we glad we have that piece of legislation? Let's start there.
Well, I'm very glad we have that legislation because it has given me a chance to be up to date with the latest equipment like iPads, computers, which I never had, and have the patience to express myself verbally, but also through different mediums, which, you know, in the future, hopefully will lead to, you know, some kind of employment, although it's been kind of a rather slow process. You know, it's it's made, you know, when I first moved to Colarusso in this house, I couldn't get over thresholds, and it, all these houses, or my house was brand new 8 years ago, and it they had thresholds that, you know, I asked them to nail them down, and they were happy to do it. You know, the technicians were into making a place for handicapped people, so they didn't realize that the, you know, it needed, that needed to be done. And that made, you know, my life on a daily basis really successful.
Yeah.
Being able to get my wheelchair over a threshold.
That is such a wonderful example of how the legislation ensured that action could be taken. Jenny, broaden that out for us a bit. Talk to us about accessibility. What have we gained from the ADA around accessibility, which is this huge, big issue, isn't it, for so many people in this country?
I mean, it is. If you think about the positives, that was 1990. I mean, you can go further back. Really, in the 70s, there was, you know, the disability rights movement really started back then. And if you think about the positives, the right to have access to buildings, activities, environments that are federally funded, we've had improvements in, like, our wonderful BAMSI homes that we have that are accessible. We've had improvements in some transportation, you know, modifications so that people can access the T and try to get around more places. We, simple things such as sidewalk cutouts so that people can, you know, utilize that, or even talk to text, or making sure, and this is not everywhere, but hopefully that Braille is available, you know, for people who need it. When we think of the technology forward movement too, that's happening right now in the state of Massachusetts, that's making a huge impact in people's lives. So if you think of the positives that have come out of that, many wonderful positives have, but like you said, with everything, there's still more that needs to be done, right? Yeah. Because disability is a spectrum, and what might be accessible to some might not be accessible to others. And only if you're in their shoes, do you really know what it might be like. So, you know, try to imagine if you were in a certain person's shoes, how accessible is grocery shopping? How accessible is using the train? You know, you have to think about that. Or even, you know, say it's the weekend and you want to go shopping in a quaint little town. How accessible are those buildings or those doorways to get in?
Yeah.
To what, you know, to be able to actually browse, you know, the store. So you have to think about that. And there's a lot of positives, but there definitely be, if you're in somebody's shoes and you think about that, there's still a long way to go.
Yeah, I love that because, you know, we talk about ableism, right? We talk about seeing the world through a particular human being who doesn't have visible disabilities or whatever. And I think we do a lot of that. We design our world for one kind of person, really, and that is people who are ambulatory, people who don't have disabilities. I'd like to think that the ideas of cutting curbs so that people have access in their wheelchairs. One thing I love is the fact that on trails, I'm a hiker, and you see now that there are some hiking paths that are specifically for people with disabilities. That's incredible. But we do see the world a certain way, don't we, that is pretty much predetermined.
We do. I think, with the idea of universal design, which is if the world was accessible to all, inclusive for everyone, it would be such a better place, right? Because with all this new ideas, new infrastructure that came through from the ADA, it has actually benefited everybody. Everybody uses those sidewalk cutouts. If you just think of something as simple as that, or even talk to text, everybody uses that. So really, you have to think of society as a whole would be a better place if we all thought of universal design and didn't have as many barriers. Barriers are the challenge. There's a lot of barriers. There can be a lot of pushback, I think, to making certain things more accessible. And that's that ableism that we all need to become allies and activists and work with our fellow citizens who have disabilities to empower them to advocate for more improvement and not just become okay with what is available right now.
Right. I love that, Jen, because, there is obviously, you can have this sort of almost ethereal conversation about you that access is for everybody, that if we do live in a democratic society, then it should be for everybody. And that's a big debate on so many levels right now. But the idea of embracing that in terms of for the good of everyone, I think is a really, really wonderful way of looking at how we can advance this and look at all of the benefits that everybody has had. We are running out of time, which seems ridiculous because we've only just started this conversation. But Martha, I just wanted to give you the last word as we talked about that link between what happens on an everyday basis and the advocacy that we have to continue to struggle to do to make sure that our government keeps their eye on the ball in terms of moving forward with disability rights. What do you think? Are you happy? I don't think you'll ever be happy with the progress we make because there's always progress to be made. But certainly being a part of this movement must be really amazing for you. You must feel that you're part of something that is making a real difference.
I do feel very extremely lucky to have housing that, where I can move around, in and outside at my own will. And, I hope that others who are lining up on long lists to have that kind of housing or, the transportation, I'd like to see, equipment improved, like wheelchairs, and so that, you can go to the hospital like everybody else.
Yeah.
And so I'm very, very... sure, we need to keep going.
Right. There you have it. There you have it, Martha. Those are beautiful words and always, always advancing. So Martha and Jenny, thank you so much for coming on the show and making being able to sign on and through Zoom. It was wonderful to have you. And hopefully you'll both come again when we get closer to the actual anniversary of the ADA. Thank you so much. Really appreciated you coming on. And goodbye, everybody. See you next week.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you. Okay.